How would you, before I move to talk, but I'd like to ask you about we talked a little bit already about the place of science and technology sort of in your home, which it, and I was wondering if you could talk, just as we were talking about the seriousness in the culture there at the time, was there, how would you characterize growing up for your first decade of life, the place of science and technology in that culture? Was it big, you know, did you have an image of the great engineer or, you know, the scientist?
I think from 0 to 10,
or just, or, you know, whatever.
Well, one thing that I think most of us did in our family was read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, my father provided a lot of books, and I read voraciously, and I think some of my brothers did as well. And so we really, I would say, you know, had our interest stimulated by reading, and you know, and some of the books were classics, and we always got classic books for Christmas and so on, and I think it provided a curiosity, you know, that was stimulated at the right period in life, and I think, and we, our, a lot of our spare time was spent reading good books and.
Classic literature, or not, was were
some
you reading nonfiction too? Or?
Yeah, some fiction, some nonfiction, and you know, a lot of variety, and at that time, you know, these pocket books started coming out, and so we'd read, you know, read a good many of those. But my father usually bought us classics, and you know, the Dickens and the
right,
you know, Gulliver's Travels and so on, and I read a whole series. It was called we read the Hardy Boys. Those were pretty light reading, but there was a series of books by an author on it was Dave Darren's first year at Annapolis and second year. And there's a group of guys who went to West Point or Annapolis or Coast Guard Academy, and these were fictional, but they were quite good reading, and they're sort of typical of a lot of the things that we had access to, that I don't even know where they came from. Our grandmother or somebody, some of it were written before, let's say, before we were born, but I think we were exposed to some technology, but it wasn't a, yeah, not a lot. When the war started, we lived right near Curtis Wright factory, maybe 2 miles from it, which was at the Buffalo Airport, and we became interested in airplanes, and we built model airplanes, a lot of them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
dozens of them. That was one of our favorite hobbies, and then we'd fly them, and you know, some of them would fly and some of them wouldn't. But
did they have? Were they motorized or were they gliders?
A rubber band.
Right.
At that time, it was about as much as we could afford.
Sure.
But we built a lot of those and became very interested in you know, aircraft, because we're building models of almost anyone you want to name. You know, there's a P-40 or you know, a Cessna, or it was not a Cessna, it was a Piper Cub, I think, at that time. But so that was a maybe as close as you get to technology, but we were interested in mm-hmm. you know, the airplanes that were being built for the war, and some of our, I think we at one point worked for Larry Bell, who was the founder of Bell Aircraft, that made helicopters at that,
right.
at that time and became the manufacturer of them. He lived nearby and
you worked for him?
Well, yard work.
Okay. Right.
And that was, a lot of the people were involved in companies in our community. And so we really had the chance to be exposed, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And when you get to, I mean, from your description, it sounds like the parochial grade school, well, through eighth grade, was a pretty serious academic workload there. Mm-hmm. Sounds like. But I was wondering if any particular experiences or mentors from that period of time before you get to the public high school.
I think mostly it was just we had nuns for teachers, and I don't think any of them. I consider necessarily a mentor. Do you have enough light?
Oh yeah, I'm fine. Light? Thanks.
You can pull that over. But we had good teachers. I have to say they were very good, and I was always motivated to do well in school, and I think most of my brothers and sister similarly were. But I wouldn't name anybody as a great mentor.
And but all of you were performing very well, good grades and all that.
I think.
Yeah.
I always wound up being first in my class and all through grade school. And I think most of my brothers and sister did well. And we were expected to by my father. But I think it often boiled down to more. How interested were you in the subjects and in doing well? And for me, I just found that I could always do best in the classes that I was in.
And did that continue for you when you went to high school? Did you have the same experience?
Yeah, I finished high school in 3 years. And I was doing that because I thought I could go into the Naval Academy a year earlier. And it turned out I was too young by about 4 days.
No.
so it couldn't. But yeah, it continued for me. I was an honor student in high school, and I did have a mentor there, and several of them. One person who he was a counselor for the high school, we only had one counselor, and there were maybe, I'd say, 1,200 students or something like that.
School.
But he took a real interest in me. His name was Mr. Port. And I was interested in the Naval Academy, but I didn't know exactly how you go about doing
right.
it. And so he ordered their prospectus, and here's what subjects you should be taking. And fortunately, I was taking the right ones, which are science and math and so on, and he was making sure that I had all of these, and if you got an A or B, you were not required to take the full exam
mm-hmm.
to get into Annapolis. And I was part of the National Honor Society and found that I could do pretty well, and as a good student. And, several of my brothers were as well.
And was it, did you just find that you had a facility at things and things came easy for you, or was it a mixture between that and long hours, sort of doggedness, or?
Well, I would say, things came relatively easily,
right?
But and with a family of seven children, there weren't very many quiet places to study.
Yeah.
So we all wound up studying around the dining room table, as I remember, because we didn't, we all slept in one bedroom, all the boys, and so we didn't have any other place.
Right.
And so it was not too easy to take, you know, to find a lot of time alone. And so I think it came, you know, relatively easy. But I had already a strong interest and ability in math and science, and a real strong interest, and found that I could pick them up really easily.
Were you taking the normal sort of sequence in math and science, that so you would take, you took chemistry, physics, and the normal mathematics sequence through
calc?
Or
I was actually accelerating a good bit of the time. I would, in New York State, if your teacher would let you take the Regents mm-hmm. exams, and you had 90 or better as a score, and you could drop that course, in other words, get credit for the full year at, say, the half year. And so I was taking a lot of those and you know, not having to take as, you know, the four,
right.
2 years, or like Latin or whatever. And I did that in quite a few subjects.
Hmm.
And some of them, like chemistry, I never even was in a class. I took, the teacher tutored me when I was trying to finish up, and I took, you know, I studied for maybe I don't remember, but a couple months with him as a tutor. But I got a very high grade on the exam. And
was that during school he would tutor you, because
yeah.
you'd already sort of finished the course,
right.
you know?
Yeah, well, I think what happened was that I did some of it in the summer. I would study
mm-hmm.
in the summer, and took maybe two or three courses that I was doing almost on my own in the summer.
Right.
But with, you know, some tutoring. And so I had enough at the end of 3 years to graduate. And I think I wound up taking chemistry after that, because you needed it for the Naval Academy.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember passing it in a fairly short, in less than a half a year.
Right.
For the, where it was normally a full year course.
Sequence.
And maybe four or five others too.
Wow. Did you work during high school, or what were your sort of extracurriculars?
Like? Yeah, I worked in a soda fountain, as a soda fountain jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of, I think originally did lawns and, you know,
mm-hmm.
yard work for people, and sometimes both of those. But I, the last couple of years, I worked on a pretty regular basis in a dairy where I help make ice cream and work sometimes out in the front, you know, waiting
mm-hmm.
on customers and a variety of things for the same company for two or three years, something like that, over. And it was a pleasant change, you know, from all the school.
Sure. Did you have, maybe you're interested in Annapolis, that goes back to that conversation with the priest at age 8 or whatever, maybe partially inspired by the book that you mentioned that you read. Did you have any other experiences with sailing or the ocean, or were there any other draws to the Navy in Annapolis?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. We were relatively restricted in, you know, in how far we could go in the, you know, in the summer.
Right.
And so we didn't, we lived near Lake Erie, but
right.
I don't think I was ever in a boat on Lake Erie as a, you know, before going to Annapolis. And so it was mainly through reading and I'd say that was a stimulus for me. And I don't know, it's very rare, at least watching my kids, and that, you know, you decide, like, in the sixth grade what you're going to do,
yeah.
and you go ahead and do it. Yeah, it was a goal I had from about sixth grade on. And I, that thing was from reading something, you know, fictional that was sort of, you know, sounded very, very nice sort of thing. But then I also was stimulated by the idea of a career, you know, in the service.
And, right.
And I really, I just decided really early on. And this priest, incidentally, from that point on, he called me the admiral. and the only admiral I've ever been is in the American Airlines club.
As we were talking about before, you know, World War II really overlaps with your high school experience.
Right.
And again, we talked about the sort of aura of seriousness that was in not just your community and high school, but probably many places.
Right.
I wanted to just ask, what was that what was your experience like of the war? You had a, I guess your brother,
Jim.
He did fly during the war.
Yeah, he did.
So the experience of the war for your community, yourself, and your family, if you had some thoughts on that.
Well, it was a background that was, you know, that was it's very similar to what we have right now with the terrorist thing, but even more so because, you know, many, many people in our community were going off to fight, mm-hmm. and some of them were killed, and it was something you're constantly reminded of at school, at home, the news, mm-hmm. which was only radio at that time, and by our father, who was, he said pretty early on that he thought all of us older ones, through me, would probably wind up serving in the military during this war. And so it put somewhat of an urgency into our, you know, our education and our, you know, into learning and doing well. And it also, I think, it provided opportunities that maybe weren't there before, where, like the Navy, had a ROTC program, or B-12, mm-hmm. as I call it, that became ROTC. And we saw opportunities for going to college that we might not have had otherwise. I would say it was, in one way, it provided incentives to be able to go into these programs, and in other words, to do well in school so that you'd be qualified, because they're very selective.
Right.
And you know, and then the other aspect of, you know, wanting to join the military to be, you know, in a patriotic sense. You wanted to be part of it. And it was, I would just say, everybody that was decent, you know, and that would include most people, saw this as something that they should contribute to. And so it was a background that was very much present all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, for me personally, created an incentive, you know, to do things sooner than I might have otherwise, and it sort of gave you goals that might not otherwise have been there or had been as obvious.
Mm-hmm. So you finish, you do high school in 3 years, so is it in 44 that you're finishing
uh-huh.
up then?
Right.
And the counselor is getting you the prospectus and the application
right.
materials for Annapolis. You find out that you missed the age cutoff by
right.
4 days. what happened then with the application procedure or the nomination procedure, I guess?
Right, you have to be nominated, and I was, I had no, I basically found when I, you know, I was applying to take the exam, they gave civil service exams to be nominated, and I found out, you know, pretty much towards the end of my last year in high school, which was my third year, that I really wasn't, when we got all the prospectus, it became obvious, you know, that I was
right.
going to be too young. I, at that point, went to a preparatory school in Annapolis, Maryland for, oh, maybe 2 months or something of that order, to prepare for the civil service exam to take in which to get an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And there were
okay.
various, you could get an appointment from your congressman or senator or both or
right.
whatever. And so I took a course in a prep school in Annapolis and it was quite a good one, and decided, you know, that I would fill in that time between then and the, you know, if I could get an appointment working and filling in the blanks in, you know, like chemistry that I
right.
didn't have. And so it turned out I got 3 or 4 appointments, I don't remember, but included was a principal appointment from Senator Mead of New York State, which was the one that I accepted. And I had others, you know, that I was, one of them was a statewide congresswoman at large and the local congressman. But anyway, I then started filling the blanks in my background.
At the prep school?
No, after I came out of the prep school.
Okay.
And it was just a cram course.
Right.
Sort of for, you know, and where they had all the previous civil service exams. And it was a smart thing to do. I had met another fellow who, from our grade school and high school, who had gone to Annapolis and made it in, and he wasn't what I consider real bright.
Mm-hmm.
But when I found out how, you know, I found out he had gone to this school, and so I talked to his father and found out the details and went there as well. I went to another preparatory school for a couple months in Washington, D.C. in this interim period that prepares you for the entrance exam at Annapolis and West Point. And it was a very, very good school. And they, it's similarly somewhat of a cram course, but I only had to take exams in English and math.
And because you had done
right,
the regents.
I qualified.
Yeah.
They called, if you qualified with a B or more average, that was all they asked. And if you had a year of college, you didn't have to take anything. You could go
okay.
in on that. But I didn't have time to get in a year of college. But anyway, so I, part of the time was spent doing that. And I was working and then finishing, filling in the courses and stuff that I didn't have. And so I took the Naval Academy entrance exam, and I did well on that. And so that was the last sort of obstacle. And so I entered Annapolis the June of 49, which was before my class in high school, my original class in high school, would have graduated.
June of 45?
June of 45.
Right,
sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, graduated.
Right, right.
From, yeah, and June of 45. And so I was busy that year, but I'm not sure what I followed.
Wow, that's a pretty tall order for, I mean, is that pretty much the first time you're living away from home?
Yeah.
And you're working?
Right.
And you're going to school, and you're in a pretty far from home. I mean,
yeah.
Well, I guess relatively far.
Yeah. And it was a good experience, and it most of the people in this preparing for the Naval Academy exam went for 8 months. And so I spent maybe two, but it was the right 2 months. they were doing the CRAM course.
Okay.
And I was, it turned out to be a good enough, enough time to learn what I had to learn to sort of hit the exam.
Right.
Because at that time, it's hard to believe some of these things now, but there was like Senator Meade, I think I was the single appointee that year, and there was, I think he had 1,200 applicants.
Wow.
And I mean, a lot of people were doing this as a preference to, you know, going in the Army or whatever. At that point, oh. You'd be drafted if you didn't, go to B-5 or B-12 or one of those Naval Academy. And so it was to get an appointment under those circumstances was pretty incredible. And the local one, you know, the local congressman, maybe there were 400 people that had applied. And anyway, I was happy, really happy to be able to qualify and get that appointment.
So when you begin your course of training and study at Annapolis, at that time, well, I had a number of questions about Annapolis. I seemed to have lots of questions about everything, but one was about, were there decisions early on about a track or course of study to get into, that is to say, or was the first year or two just core curriculum or core studies, or did you track right away to the engineering side?
At the Naval Academy when I went there was only one curriculum.
Oh, okay.
And we all, the variable was the language.
That's
and you could take languages. They had, you know, everything from Russian to Portuguese, and you know, you name it.
Right.
And so that was the only variable. And it isn't that way now. You would select your major now, but I would suspect that it probably isn't all that different. But we wound up, the first couple of years were really liberal arts, and you know, sort of getting you, you know, they were courses that were introducing you to the discipline of the U.S. Navy, and you know, leadership courses, et cetera. But I have to say, you know, I think it was a very good broad education, you know, liberal arts, and there were some, you know, really incredible aspects. Some of the education, the best education you could get was attending lectures, we call it Monday night Mem Hall series. They had this big room, Memorial Hall, and they'd have Admiral Nimitz, Halsey, Spruance, MacArthur, name it. They'd come and they would talk, you know, probably for an hour. It's sort of like, we have a celebrity series here in Los Altos, and you've probably never heard of it, but the last three speakers included Madeleine Albright, Richard Holbrooke, and a fellow named Stephen Wynn, who is the founder of the Mirage Hotel in Las Vegas, Treasure Island, and a couple others. Anyway, we had a series of Mark Mitcher, and I mean, these people were the heroes of, you know, World War II, and we could go listen to them and ask questions of them, and there was usually somebody at least, you know, every other week or so, and so there were some parts of it that were simply incredible. And my interest was strong in the engineering and mathematics, and I always did best in those two. And the first couple of years were I would say, a very good liberal arts sort of education. And we had, in my class, I think we had 75 people out of, say, 800 or whatever, who already had bachelor's degrees through a Navy program, usually, you know, B5 or B12. We had, I think, maybe 50% or 60% of class had at least a year of college. And I think we had a couple hundred valedictorians from high school. And so it was a pretty smart group of people. And you come from, you know, from Snyder, New York, and you, where you thought you did pretty well, and boy, you're just one of the, you know, one of many. And there were some very, very bright people.
It was an eye-opener for you, I'm sure, but did you continue to excel relative to your peers?
I would say in engineering and math, and, you know, and so on, I did. And I didn't study very much at the Naval Academy, a good part of the time. And I was, and it, you know, there are a lot of things that interested me, and besides, you know, the courses were taken.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, and there was